I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
John, I don't know if you have ever looked at any of the stuff online that talks about George Lucas's original vision for the end of the Skywalker saga, but there is speculation and rumor kind of out there, and people who think it would be kind of cool if the Rise of Skywalker did include that little bit at the end that comes from Lucas's original draft idea, which is that everything has been, all the movies, all the stories have been essentially a storyteller telling the story.
Okay.
And I forget the exact term they used for this. It's almost like an organization. It's like there's been this organization throughout the entire span of all the movies, this, you know, this group of almost like monks in the background cataloging everything. And at the end, and they actually mentioned, I think they mentioned it in one of the movies. They mentioned this organization in one of the movies, which is what has people going, well, maybe they'll finish it the way Lucas intended. But the idea that's being floated around now is, what if at the very end it's R2-D2 is telling the story, or, you know, cataloging it for this organization?
That's
because he's the only character that's been there for everything.
Right.
And he's never had his memory wiped.
Right. That's interesting. You know, I haven't, you know, I don't, even though I have Star Wars things in my, you know, Google News and all of that, anytime the speculation stuff comes up, I don't really read it. Not because I'm worried about being spoiled, but just because, I don't know. I guess I'm just not that interested. But that's an interesting point of view, because one of the Star Wars books that I read, it was at the 40 year anniversary of A New Hope. They put out that book that was 40 short stories,
mm-hmm.
And that's worth reading. But there's a lot of, I mean, look, it's 40 short stories on one movie. So as you can imagine, it's a little much. They basically go through the viewpoint of every single character that's in that movie, including, you know, there's like 10 short stories just on the cantina scene where it's like, sure, you know, someone that showed up, you know, in one frame, it's their point of view of what's going on. So, you know, some of them are a little stronger than others, but one of them was really very good. And I forget the author that wrote it, cause that's a pretty heavy hitter authors in that. I think like Murr wrote one of the stories in there, Murr Lafferty, for people who aren't familiar with the show. And a lot of people that we know wrote stories in that. And one of them was about R2-D2 and being on the Jawa, the sand crawler. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about how this one Jawa was from this one Jawa's point of view, and how that Jawa was reading R2-D2's memory banks, or like showing them up on a screen. And the way that the author was describing it, it was going through all the events of like the prequels, and it was really interesting. It was like really cool to you know, kind of have some of the prequel stuff at that point sort of presented in this kind of legend way and such. So I think it's a similar idea to what you're talking about. I don't think that's going to happen, but I think it would be interesting.
I don't think it's going to happen either, but the idea or the concept that there has been this group that's just been cataloging everything for posterity, mm-hmm. you know, to keep a record, I think is kind of interesting. Like,
yeah.
Like that kind of flows through a lot of other things that we are interested in. You know, in the Marvel Universe, you've got the Watchers.
Right.
And, you know, and they alluded to the fact that the Stan Lee cameos, he's actually a Watcher, potentially.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Who's been, you know, he's been there every single time to just catalog the events that are happening, which I think is interesting. And I want to say there's a similar group in DC. I just can't recall what they are or who they are or what they're called.
Mm. You know, and speaking of the upcoming Star Wars movie, so the title is The Rise of Skywalker, right? Not mm-hmm. yeah. So The Rise of Skywalker, and some of this, you know, they will bring up stuff. A lot of the speculation will tie into the books and the TV shows and the comics and video games. And as big of a fan as I am of all that stuff, J.J. Abrams is not tying any of that together. I mean, look, if he did, I think it'd be great, because I consume much of that and I like a lot of it. And I think it would be great if they had some of that payoff on the big screen. I do not think JJ cares, and that's fine. But one of the things that was in one of the books was in, I think it's the second new Thrawn book that Timothy Zahn wrote. So Thrawn is a, I don't know if you pronounce it Chiss, like C-H-I-S-S. That's the name of his race, of his alien race. And it's revealed in the books, and I don't think this is really a spoiler, but if you're very sensitive to spoilers and you haven't read that book, you know, cover your ears for a minute. But there's a little bit of a story point about how the Chiss, that the Force-sensitive Chiss, are not Jedis. They don't because the Chiss are from like a different part of the galaxy where they don't really have Jedi. The Force sensitive Chiss were used to navigate their starships, like, so they would sort of plot the hyperspace routes. And this is the one where Thrawn meets Anakin Skywalker. It's that book, and Thrawn is kind of, you know, remarks about his name, because in the Chiss, they refer to the Force-sensitive people as Skywalkers, because they're like plotting the routes in space, like they're walking the sky. So I've one of the speculations that I've heard is that they're not going to call them Jedi anymore. They're going to just call Jedis Skywalkers. Now, I don't think that's going to happen at all. But a lot of people were like, "That's what the title means." I'm like, I don't think so. I don't think J.J. Abrams sat down with Timothy Zahn and worked all this out. It's not his way, I don't think.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'm positive about the movie. I don't know. I like Force Awakens. I think there's a good chance that JJ will bring it home. I mean, I keep hearing that it's like, it's going to tie all 9 movies together. That's a tall order if he pulls that off, because I don't see how you tie 9 movies together. But I'm curious to see how
surprise,
it's done.
Surprise, Misa Jar Jar.
Yeah, no, I think JJ. Look, and with now, at what point is JJ must have been given the job prior to the Last Jedi coming out, right?
Well, here's the thing, John. And this is something else that's been talked about quite a bit. Star Wars, I think you specifically want to say, with the Force Awakens and all the new books, that they got better organized and they got a plan, and they're going to, you know, structure this continuity better, blah, 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 blah. I don't think any of that is true. Mm. At this point, I think this is something that people talked about quite a bit. They don't have their shit together like Marvel does.
Oh no. No.
And that's why you could have one director and writing team do one movie, and then a completely different director and writing team do the next movie, and not really keep the continuity that people were looking for or expecting. And now a lot of people are saying the reason JJ is coming back is to fix it.
Yeah.
So I just feel like they don't have their shit together as well as Marvel does. And a lot of people feel like that. So when you say that there's a book, that book is continuity. So that should affect things. Somehow, someway, somewhere.
I've
whether it's a line, a throwaway line in the movie, I don't know. But I mean, this is continuity now.
Yeah, I think they made too big of a deal about that in the beginning because it got people like me all excited about all the books and everything. And then other than Rogue One, which brought up stuff from the books and Rebels, you know, none of them have tied into the books really at all. And that's fine, but just consider that. But I think what you're saying is, obviously, you have Kevin Feige with Marvel, and it's unprecedented what him leading that. And obviously, there's millions of people or thousands of people involved in the creation of those movies. But him steering the ship and making all these things work, it's a miraculous achievement. And I think everybody who likes this kind of stuff would agree with that statement. And I think we want Star Wars to be like that too.
I don't think it's just not. Us. I think Disney wants that too. And Disney thought they had that. That's the problem. I think Disney thought we're just as well organized with this. We're going to be able to move forward with this in just the same manner. And it hasn't happened that way.
No. And I think they are. I think what's going on right now with Star Wars is I think after the backlash to The Last Jedi, the disappointing box office of Solo, and plus also remember all of the drama that went into making Solo and Rogue One, for that matter. Rogue One turned out well, but there was a lot of drama in the making of that movie.
And those are three movies that I think are absolutely fine and great too. Movies.
Yeah, me too. I like them all. And that's a different discussion. That's fans and what we think about and we could certainly talk about that too, but just to talk about what's going on in the creative department and the leading, I think after all of that, I think they did pump the brakes and they were like, okay, so they have to finish the Skywalker saga, obviously. And that's what's going to be what JJ is going to wrap up in December. But I think there is going to be a break for 2 years before we're going to see another.
I think it's longer than that because they're talking about there's not going to be a Star Wars movie during Marvel's new phase.
Okay, that and you know what? I think that's a good idea. I'd rather see them regroup and have a more Marvel-like strategy with kind of tying things together or just having everybody on the same page. And I think a big part of that is going to be the shows. And I'm very curious to see what The Mandalorian is going to be like, because Dave Filoni, Clone Wars and Star Wars Rebels, is quite heavily involved in that. So.
I know. And you've said in the past, you think that he should be their Kevin Feige.
I do. But, you know, I think because he's an animated, you know, that's his background, that they're not going to just promote him to a Feige-like position.
Well,
but,
and to your point, in along the same vein, then I will throw out that I think that DC should do the exact same thing with Bruce Timm.
Now, Bruce Timm did all the animated stuff.
Right. He did the Batman, the animated series, Superman, Justice League Unlimited, all the movies. He's been involved with all of it from day one.
Cool. Yeah.
He has a great grasp of DC's universe. He has a great grasp of their characters. I think he could do the exact same thing for DC that Filoni could do for Star Wars.
Yeah. And what I'm dying to see with The Mandalorian is with Filoni being on board. And I think from what I understand,
Filoni. What did I say? I said Filoni. Filoni.
Filoni. It's a, I believe that he and Favreau have a very good working relationship. And obviously because Favreau brought him on, and I know Filoni's directing a few episodes and I think he's there and I'm sure he probably has a hand in the writing. So I wonder how much input Favreau is giving to Filoni, and are we going to see, look, keep in mind with Filoni being so involved in Clone Wars and Rebels, are we going to see call, like, are we going to see stuff from Rebels and Clone Wars pop up in The Mandalorian? Are we going to see some characters maybe? I'm very curious, like, are they just going to kind of start over and just kind of make it this world and not worry about that? Like, I'm not expecting like Ezra's going to show up in The Mandalorian, or it could be like, you could have characters like that show up. Maybe not Ezra because the timeline probably wouldn't work. Oh no, it could, because the Mandalorian, I believe, is supposed to take place a little bit after Return of the Jedi. So you could have any of those characters that survived Rebels, any of them can show up, because you can't have them come during the timeline of the main movies, but you could certainly have them come pop up after. So I would be curious to see how much, if any, of that shows up in that show.
And I will throw it out there that if you're in a different part of the galaxy,
mm-hmm.
you could absolutely have those characters pop up in the same timeline.
Well, you can have Hera come anywhere, because it's established canon-wise that she's around. Like, that she, obviously they give the call out to General Syndulla in Rogue One, and we know that she survives to Return of the Jedi. And I think there's, you know, some of those little cartoon shorts that they did. I forget what that was called. I think she shows up in some of those. So it's known that she at least is around. And then obviously there's you know, Ahsoka and Sabine are looking around for Ezra, so you don't know if or what timeline. And they might not know that yet. They're like, I don't know, Filoni may have that all worked out in his head already, or he may just be like, yeah, that's the end of their story. That's where I'm leaving it. But I would think you're going to see those characters called back. And obviously there's a much greater chance of that happening in something like The Mandalorian. Like, they're not going to show up in Rise of Skywalker. Like, none of that's going to happen, obviously. But I'd like to see it. And I whether it's Filoni that gets that job or what, I would like to see more of a tie-in. And that's kind of the interesting thing about the TV series, is having more time to, you know, in our last episode with Kate Baker, I talked about how I'm rewatching Rebels and how tight it feels watching it, you know, episode after episode after episode. And you know, Filoni had a plan day one where this was all going. And even
so did the Cylons.
That's true too. But you know what? I watched a couple of episodes ago in season two, they introduced the Purgle, which play a pretty big role in the last couple of episodes of Rebels. And I'm like, and I knew they'd introduced them, but I remember when the first Purgle episode aired, I thought like, oh, whatever, this is kind of space whales. All right, that's kind of weird. But now that I know what happens to them and like the role that they play, I'm like, this is, oh, like, I loved watching that episode now, because I know where he was headed. And I'm like, Filoni probably had this planned from the beginning. He's like, I'm going to introduce the Purgles in season two, and then I'm going to pay them off in season four. And when you have that long range plan, it's so satisfying storytelling wise. And I think that was the problem with Force Awakens into The Last Jedi, is that there wasn't a lot of carryover. A lot of the stuff that JJ sets up in Force Awakens was not paid off. And I think that was some people's problem with the movie, even though I liked both movies quite a bit. I think that's where some of the criticism is. And I think just moving forward, if they can just have a better plan, how these things tie together, I'm not saying like it all has to, but it's like, again, if you're going to announce that we're wiping out all the old canon so that all the books count, well, then have them count, like, don't, like that. And I think the books have been getting better. I've liked the last couple books a lot better. I feel like there was a run where I really wasn't enjoying the books very much. I thought they were just kind of placeholder books, and it's like, all right, whatever. And I didn't like a lot of them. The last couple that I've read, I have liked. So I'm hoping this is a sign of better things to come within Star Wars. But you're talking about Bruce Timm. Now, is that his name? Bruce Timm? Is that?
Yeah.
Is he involved in Young Justice too?
I don't know. I don't know.
Okay.
I think he's done most of the, he did the original series, like, right. I said, and then he did Batman Beyond.
Right.
And he has been heavily involved with the movies, the animated movies that they've made. I don't think that he had anything to do with Teen Titans Go.
Okay.
Or Young Justice, I don't think.
Young Justice is on. Are they in the second part of like a new series right now?
Second part of the season three.
Yes, because so, I've been seeing like review blog posts up. So I'm like, oh, so have you been? Now, have you been watching this? Because you just bought this, so you're just going to wait until this chunk ends, and then you'll buy the next batch.
Yep,
that's cool. Yeah, I hate when I kind of don't like when they do that, when they break up one season. As I'm watching,
that's what Rebels did.
That's what I was just going to bring up with that. They did, and they got their asses handed to them for doing it that way. They just did it in season two.
Sabrina did that. The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina on Netflix did part one, part two.
Yeah. It's like, well, then call it season three and season four, or season one and season two, or what? I understand why they do it. Like Voltron did that too. I think with the stream, see, with Rebels, I didn't like it because that wasn't available to stream anywhere. You had to buy it if you didn't have it on cable. So people, myself included, got annoyed because it was essentially, In terms of paying for it, it got weird and you ended up paying kind of more than you probably should have for buying two different halves of the same season. Which is
exactly what they want, right?
Yeah, but if you notice then in season three and four, they streamlined it and be like, no, if you buy season three, then this is the whole season. And Rebels also did that thing where the first two episodes were a movie. So that was not included in season one. You had to buy that. And then at the end of season one, there was another movie that was basically two episodes. And those are great. But when I was going back, I had to buy a couple of things to get the whole story. Because I'm like, oh, you know what? I bought season one, but I didn't buy the first movie. So I had to go back and buy the first movie, which was kind of annoying because it was like two episodes, but I had to pay like $6 for two episodes because it was a movie. I'm like, well, that's not cool. Well, they eventually did it more traditionally, but yeah, I'm in the middle of like season 2, episode 4. It's like, it's dumb.
And I'll throw it out there. Young Justice did that previously too.
Yeah.
When it aired. And then the channel formerly known as Sci-Fi did that all the time with their shows. It's one of the things that I disliked. Mm. You would get a few episodes and then you would get nothing for 6 months until they released part two.
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting that I'm curious to see Outlander. Have you ever watched Outlander? I have not.
Is that the romance thing?
Yes.
Gail, or what's her name? Diana Gabaldon?
Gabaldon. Yeah.
Yeah. I watched the first episode of that. That's not my thing. And what's funny is I've talked to MB about that in the past because she loved those books, I believe.
Yes.
And that is just not my thing. I actually reviewed, they did a graphic novel that was all from Jamie's point of view. Like it was like the first couple of books, but it was all Jamie's story from his point of view. And I just didn't even care for that. I tried, but it's just not my thing.
I have not watched it. I read the first book in that series really long ago, like when it, I don't know if it was when it first came out, but like well before I got involved in this community. So and well before I started reading a lot of fantasy and such.
And it's an interesting and cool premise.
Yes.
It really is.
Oh yeah. And so I was always interested in the show. It's also Ronald D. Moore, so you could take that however you want. Like that's either a positive thing or a negative thing, depending on your point of view. But I was interested in it. I have not watched it. It's a Starz show. So this brings up some interesting things with streaming, which is why I bring it up, because you were talking about Young Justice. So obviously it was on Starz, and Starz has their own streaming service as well, which I'm not signing up for Starz just to watch it. However, the first two seasons of Outlander a couple months ago popped up on Netflix.
Yeah, I saw that. And
I am a little interested, but I bring it up because I'm like, well, that's pretty weird, because why would Starz have some of their content now show up on Netflix? And I'm sure there could be a multitude of reasons why. I would guess it probably is even though it's a Starz original, there's probably other production companies involved who own certain rights, and maybe they can sell the...
And that's not unusual. There's been other Starz shows. The Spartacus has been on Netflix.
Oh, right.
The Bruce Campbell Ash versus the Evil Dead has been.
Oh, that's there. Right. That's been there.
Yeah, so they have some sort of deal. Well, it's not just this one star show. There's been other stars shows that have been out there.
Well, when Netflix first started streaming, they built a lot of their library on star shows, because I think Starz was a company. Again, this is before streaming had proved itself. And I think Starz was like, sure, you give us a couple million dollars, you can have our shows. Cool. And then when Netflix started getting kind of popping, this is way before they started doing any of their originals. But a lot of their content was Starz. And I think Starz, as they saw the success of Netflix, was like, what did we do? they're building their name on our stuff. So of course, as always happens with streaming, then once for the most part, Starz did not renew their deals, because I think everything that Starz made showed up on Netflix, including a lot of not stuff they made, but a lot of the just movies that they show too, because Starz has a pretty big movie catalog as well. So those all showed up on Netflix too. So when that initial deal expired, Netflix lost a lot of stuff. So I was surprised to see anything Starz show up, because I would think that Starz wants to just save everything for their own channel. But I wonder if it is a rights thing with other creators and other companies involved, or if it's a strategy of, well, let's let Netflix show the first two seasons, and then if people want to get seasons 3 through 5 or whatever season they're up to, then they got to pay for Starz. So I wonder what the strategy is there. I don't know if you have thoughts on that, but that was surprising to me that a Starz show, but you're right. What is the Ash versus the Evil Dead? That's the name of the one Starz show that's been up there for a while too. So I bet it has more to do with rights and more than one company owning parts of the rights, because we see that a lot too.
Well, and I think there's always two different channels here. There's US/North America, and then there's the rest of the world.
Right.
So in the US/North America, everybody wants to create their own streaming service. And then when they go international, they put it on Netflix or Prime.
Right. Yeah.
I'm looking at a story here on Variety. Starz COO on Netflix, HBO, and Starz streaming growth strategy. There's a place in people's home for Starz streaming service, asserted Starz COO Jeffrey Hirsch. Pushing back against the idea that it's tough for smaller, over-the-top platform to compete with Netflix and others. Netflix has done a phenomenal job of convincing everybody in this room and everybody on Wall Street that unless you spend $13 billion on programming, you can't compete, and you should take your ball and go home, and that's just not the case. Like many others, he believes that viewers' budgets will be able to tolerate about 4 or 5 different pay TV streaming services, and that Starz, long an add-on network, will be a complement to Netflix, Amazon, and Hulu. He even had a bundling suggestion for viewers. We think that Starz, with our focus on female audiences, coupled with Disney Plus for kids, is a great combination for the home. So it looks like he is definitely trying to, you know, push for a Starz-only streaming service moving forward.
Well, they have that already. They have yeah. A Starz-only streaming service.
But basically, they've had Netflix deals in the past.
Right.
And I'm wondering if they're just not going to... do that anymore.
Yeah, well, maybe it's an old deal, but that's why I was so surprised to see Outlander pop up, because I'm like, that's a star show. Why is that coming on Netflix? So yeah, I agree. I did see a news story this week. I don't know if you posted it about the, I am not going to sign up for this, but that when the Disney streaming service starts, that they've just, so that's going to be $6.99 a month, or like $69.99 if you pay for it a year in advance, I should say. But they are doing a bundle. Did you read about this? There was a bundle with Disney Plus, Hulu, and ESPN Plus. Because obviously Disney.
No, but that's the next wave, right? Because everybody loves bundle. Bundle your phone with your cable and your internet service. Mm-hmm. Bundle your phone with your milk delivery. I was like, what the fuck? Yeah, just bundle. Bundle, here's the thing that people don't understand, they don't get, they jump on these bundles. You get screwed in a bundle. You absolutely get screwed in a bundle, because there's always something in there that you absolutely don't need or don't want.
I'll tell
it's
you.
It's like Comcast. Comcast. We have a great bundle. It's your landline, your television, and your internet. It's the triple play. Well, I don't need a landline. Well, you should get it anyway. Because if you get it, you're going to save more money.
Yeah. Well, it's
with
like
something I'm never going to use, I'm never going to need, I never want.
It's like the, I remember years ago watching an episode of, there was like those extreme couponing shows. Do you remember when that was a thing for a while?
Oh,
my wife, my wife was watching it one time. And as I was watching this episode, I just like, yeah, but look, I was impressed because you get these people that would have $500 worth of stuff like groceries or what have you. And not only would they not pay anything, they would like get money back at the end for someone. I'm like, that's insanity. But I realized then when you go to these people's houses, they'd go out to their garage and they just had all of this stuff stored. And it was just like, you know, 30 things of deodorant and like, you know, innumerable amounts of paper towels. And just, it's like, yeah, but then you have to store all this crap. And like, do you need that much deodorant? Like, it's crazy. Anyway, so I think it's the same idea of like, yeah, you're paying for stuff that you don't need. I would not do that bundle for two reasons. Number one, even though I already pay for Hulu and I am planning on getting the Disney streaming service, number one, I don't watch sports, so I wouldn't get ESPN. Plus, I think ESPN Plus is pretty limited. So even if you wanted sports, like I feel like SportsCenter is not even on ESPN Plus, and that's kind of why people watch ESPN, or one of the reasons why. So that's a very limited service. Plus, the version of Hulu that's the ad-supported version that is included in that bundle. Like, I already pay for the no ads, and I'm not going to go back to ads just to save a couple. So again, it's exactly what you're just saying. It's something that I don't need because I don't need ESPN, and it would be an inferior version of Hulu because I would go back to doing ads, and in the end, it would just be the same price. So I will just pay for my Hulu as I have been, and I'll pay separately for the Disney Plus because that's the service that I want. I imagine that might be an appealing service to some people, and it could be a good deal. I think it's the Disney service is $6.99, and I think it's $12.99 if you get all three, if you get the bundle. So technically, it's kind of like getting one for free then. But again, if you don't want all three, then that's not going to do you any good at all. Did you have other thoughts about the bundling and how, or is that kind of?
I just think it's stupid.
Yeah,
I think it's stupid.
It could be.
And it's what you do right now if you have cable, whether you realize it or not.
Yeah.
When you have cable or satellite, you are bundling channels, and that's why you have 10 versions of QVC and 20 versions of ESPN, and you have all these channels that I guarantee you you're not watching. Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh, yeah.
So you look at the let's say there's 300 channels that you're getting from cable. Of those 300, how much do you want to bet that you watch 10?
Oh yeah. Well, that's, you know, Tom Merritt brings, yeah.
But their argument is that it's the other 290 channels bundled together with those 10 that you watch that make it affordable for you to watch those 10 channels.
Right.
And that's potentially what they're trying to do here. It, like, they want you to have Hulu with commercials because that's a double income stream for them. Number one, you're paying for fucking Hulu with commercials. Number two, you're watching commercials.
Right.
So now they can go to advertisers and say, well, you know, our bundle is working really, really well because, you know, this is our growth strategy and this is how much money we're making off that. And this is what now we're getting X amount of thousands of tens of thousands, hundred thousands, millions of impressions on our Hulu channel. So now we can, you know, we can offer you this for your advertising, blah, 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 blah. You know, it's just nuts. It's the we're going to raise the price. I always go back to this. We're going to raise the prices of ebooks to prove that people prefer paperbacks.
I was talking to, I think I told you, I have a friend who for the past year has been working for Audible, and I was talking to him about that very thing.
This is Audible.
I don't know if you said, this is a totally different topic, but it brings up what you were just talking about, the ebooks, because I was talking to him about ebooks too, even though he works for Audible, because I mentioned that, I don't know if you saw this story about a week or two ago, how within Audible. So I do this sometimes too, where I will buy the ebook and the audiobook, and then I will kind of go back and forth. I used to do that more. I've actually been doing that currently with Whisper one of the books. Yes, the Whisper Sync between the two. And what I'll actually do a lot of times too is if you open up your Kindle app on your phone, the audiobook appears there too. And then it actually like will highlight the words as you're hearing the narration. So I sometimes like doing that with novels too. And I've been doing that with a novel over the past few weeks. One of the things that Audible is planning on introducing, and this isn't inside from my friend, I read a couple of blog posts and I then asked him about it, is that they are doing, it's kind of like a machine learning thing where they are, so if you buy your Audible book or you use your Audible subscription, they're going to be providing text as well. Like they're going to use some machine learning to, you know, figure out what the person's saying and then put the text up on your phone or your tablet or what have you. So you could follow along with that if you so choose to. Now, as you can imagine, well, first of all, have you seen this story yet, Patrick? Have you come
across? I have not. No.
Okay.
No.
Guess what I'm going to say next. So again, Audible is providing a service where they're going to put text up as you're listening to the audiobook you purchased. What does that now?
It's a copyright infringement.
Yeah, so that's all the articles that I read was that some of the publishers are already like, you can't do that because you have to buy the ebook and the audiobook, and you know you can't do that. You don't have the right to do that. So because I had asked my friend about that, I'm like, yeah, what do you think about this? Because have you guys been talking about that at work? He's like, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, I read a bunch of articles that some of the publishers are not happy about. He's like, yeah, we've been talking about that too. And I said, well, I'm like, so is the plan, are they still going ahead with it? And he said like, well, as far as I know, like, he's like, that's not my department, but from what I understand, they want to launch it in September. So I imagine just what you're going to see is that you'll have a bunch of publishers that will deny, like that won't allow it.
What they might do is they just might pull their books.
They could do that too, although that seems cutting off your nose to spite your face if you're
if you're trying to protect your author, if you're trying to protect the intellectual property, that is the surefire 100% way to stop this. You pull your book.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the shit that they do on a daily basis, and you shake your head, it's not just a shot across the bow. This would be a fuck you, we're done. You're not doing this shit. Because right now you have the problem with Google scraping,
right,
content, and because Google is the search engine, there's not a whole hell of a lot they can do about it, right?
Right.
Good luck suing Google.
Right.
But Audible's different. Audible, right. I mean, they could take their toys and go play somewhere else.
Because the reverse happened a few years ago, as you remember, with ebooks, they wanted to do the, like the machine voice for that, you know, where mm-hmm. like a machine voice would read it to you. And I think the publisher shut that down. I don't think that feature exists right now. I tried that once or twice too. And that is not very satisfying to hear like a robot read your book. You know, there's no inflection to it or anything, or not good enough inflection. It's not like having a trained voice actor
do it. It's no different than Siri doing it.
Yeah. But I'd be curious to see how
you have a new message from John and Elio. John and Elio says, hey, check this out. http://www. It's like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'd be curious to see how it works the other way around, if it would be weird with like punctuation and stuff. Because I could see myself taking advantage of that. And I get it from the publisher's point of view too. I wish they had better deals for buying both, though. Sometimes they do. I guess it's most people are only going to buy one anyway. Like how much of their audience are buying both the ebook and the audiobook? It's probably
I always go back to I feel that the decision, the strategy is that they do not want you to buy the ebook, John. They want you to buy the paperback. That's why they have priced ebooks the way they have, above paperbacks, slightly below a hardcover, right?
Right.
They don't want you to buy an ebook. They want you to buy a paperback. So I will ask you again, what's their incentive to bundle those two things together?
I would guess just, all right. So I have an Audible subscription as you do. And I pay whatever it is, $15 a month. So it's, and I don't know what Audible takes of that, whatever, just for math we'll say. So I'm paying $15 for each book that I listen to, which is more than I would usually pay for the ebook version. Generally speaking, sometimes if it's like an author I really love and I need it right away, I'll spend whatever the price is. And that's usually about the, you do see some things that are higher than that, but you generally don't get more than $15 for a new ebook. Really, more of the time, it's more like $12 or something like that. A lot of times, $10 or lower, whatever. My point is that if I'm already spending $15, why not? It's funny. You could do it the other way around. If you buy the ebook, a lot of times the audiobook will be a decreased price, but not the other way around. Not if you use your, like, I feel like if you use your Audible credit to spend on an audiobook, then the ebook should be a reduced price, and it is not. You can't do it the other way around. You have to buy the ebook first, and then you may get a decreased price for the audiobook, but not the other way around. And I wish it was, because I don't do that too often, because then my credits just pile up. Like, if I keep buying audiobooks based on the ebooks that I have, then my credits pile. So I don't really want to do that either. So it's weird. I wish they let you do it the other way around. Like, I wish if they let me buy the ebook, then after I've used my Audible credit, if they let me buy the ebook for like $5, I would do that more often. And I don't know why they wouldn't want an extra $5 for me, is all I'm saying. You know, it seems like a no-brainer to me, but I guess that's not the way they look at it. But I think you're right. They just want me to buy the print book, and I don't really buy a lot of print books, not in novels anymore anyway. I don't really read a lot of print books, period, but when I do buy print books, it's usually some kind of nonfiction.
When's the last time you listened to an audiobook?
I've been listening to... I'm concurrently listening to two different audiobooks right now.
Like, okay. Did either one of them start with the fact that this is an Audible Books production?
Well, they did the This Is Audible, but I don't know if they did This Is an Audible Books production, though. I don't think either of them did. I'm not sure.
Okay. Because a lot of times the things that I listen to start off with, you know, this is an Audible Books production.
Right.
Occasionally I listen to something that says this is a Macmillan audio.
Right.
Production.
Or Hachette.
This is a Hachette Audible production. But a lot of stuff that I listen to says this is an Audible production. So, and then Audible has a copyright on the production.
I think I hear what you're getting at here. Yeah.
The text copyright is usually the author.
Right.
And then there's some sort of copyright that goes off to the publisher as well. You know, there's something like that. So there's lots of different copyrights involved in it. You know, the original text copyright, Brandon Sanderson,
right,
2019, whatever. Audible production copyright, Audible Studios, 2017, whatever. So that's what I hear a lot of times. So it's all about, you know, it all comes back to profit and
right
and which swim lane you're in. And I always go back to, they don't want you to buy an ebook. They don't.
Yeah. No.
I haven't seen a Big Five publisher ebook launch for less than $10.
Yeah.
Usually it's closer to $15.
Right.
And it's not until DiNardo puts something out that it's on sale for like $5, $6, $7. Like that's when I'll see the price go down, and that's not for very long usually, because again, the paperback, they need to sell the paperback. That was the whole reason why they sued Amazon, and people tend to forget this or they just don't care anymore, but that, you know, ebooks were exploding and everybody was buying ebooks because ebooks were the greatest thing ever. They were easily accessible. If you had a reader, you could grab one, you could read on the go, you could have 100 books right at the palm of your hands, on and on and on. It was super convenient. It was iTunes all over again, right? iTunes and iPod all over again. And the publishers shit themselves. And it's like, no. We're losing money. I remember having an argument with Lou about this because I'm like, Lou, it's cheaper to create a ebook than it is to create a paperback. And he's like, no. It's more expensive.
Yeah.
It's not more expensive.
Of course.
Because again, you don't have a warehouse fee, you know, you don't have a printing fee. You don't have to pay a giant web press to lay out your book. You don't have to have all these printing costs involved. You don't have to pay the guy who drives the forklift in the warehouse to load the truck. You don't have to pay the truck driver. You just hit a button and suddenly it's there. It's on a server somewhere. You know, it's you're never going to convince me that it costs you more because I'm a digital marketer. I know exactly what it costs to do something digitally versus doing something traditionally and print it. But they don't, that's not the model.
Right.
The model is all the profit, the entire business model is built around print. So ebooks bring down that house of cards. So they had to change the entire story. They had to change the narrative. And to this day, it kills me that after they raised the prices on ebooks above paperbacks, they then started publishing stories and white papers and all kinds of stuff saying, well, look, see, we tried to tell you this and you didn't believe us, but here's the proof. We can now prove to you ebooks are not as popular as paperbacks. People prefer to buy paperbacks. Well, yeah, now you've raised the price.
Mm-hmm.
You've priced it out of the market. So, right. Of course, people are going to buy paperbacks, but they're going to buy fewer paperbacks.
Right.
Because it's still more expensive.
It is a very old business way of thinking, you know, and I think that's has come up a lot for us is that how publishing is an old business, you know.
Now, I'm going to throw something out there that is on topic, but slightly left of topic. When you talk about Audible, Amazon, anywhere you go and you buy your books and the machine learning and the AI, right? It looks at what you've purchased and it recommends something that it thinks you're going to like, right? Same thing happens on Netflix. Based on the fact that you watch this, we think you should watch this. Same thing happens on Prime. Based on the fact that you watch this, we think you should watch this. So far, it hasn't happened to me on Hulu. Whatever. What the fuck? What I would like to see, and I've seen this somewhere. I can't remember where I saw it, but it's not prevalent. It's not everywhere. I'm not interested in that.
Oh, meaning like have a button that says like, not interested in this one, not interested in this one. Yeah, I've seen that before, but not in any of the current things.
So you can teach it what you are and aren't interested in. And Audible doesn't have that. So I get recommended the same 10 things on Audible.
Right.
Over and over and over again, because it's like, well, you're really good. And I'm not interested in those 10 things. I don't want those 10 things. And you would think over time, it would get the fact that like, I'm not clicking on those. I'm not buying those. Maybe it would get a clue and stop offering them up to me and give me something different. It never has.
Right. Yeah.
I would love to see not interested.
Yeah. It'd be good if, good luck though. I don't think you're ever going to see that on Netflix because they push all their originals so much. They're not going to let you say not interested in their originals. They're going to want to keep pushing them at you. So yeah, I'd be surprised if you ever saw that, but that's interesting. It's interesting. I like getting your marketing perspective on all this stuff, Patrick. It's always, it's always good. All right. Okay. Well, good chatting. Everybody, thanks for listening. We appreciate it. If you'd like to, first of all, if you are supporting us, thank you. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. If you're not, consider becoming one of our backers over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. Patrick, what do you want to leave our listeners with this week?
That's pretty much it. I think that was we had two heady episodes in a row.
Yeah. Well, that's
deep, deep, dark, deep thoughts.
We're deep, dark thinkers. That's us. That's us. All right, everybody. Have a great week and we'll see you next time.
Smoke.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.